Welcome to Season of the Witch with Roanoke, and the show where we spill the tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth. I'm your host, Rowan, and in this week's episode, we are talking all about rites of passage and transformational journeys. This is a topic that I've thought about for some time, not as a topic, but just as a thing in my daily life. The concept of these transitions through life where we move from one state of being to another. You know, things like birthdays can be, they can have an aspect of this. They mark the transition of time. But there is a moment in our life where we are suddenly transitioned to a new phase, and it goes completely unnoticed. Educational transitions are marked quite nicely in life. You know, we graduate and we move to the next stage, but there is so much of our life that is missing a rite of passage, a doorway through the old and to the something new. It also touches on this idea of quests, questing and searching for a purpose. But before we do that, I want to just remind you of our new SOTW segment coming soon. Yes. A big cock is about to land. That's Cauldron of Candor. And in these episodes that will run alongside your usual series, you're going to be getting a lot of tea. Some big, old, steaming, sassy tea. So Cauldron of Candor is a place for pondering problems with a staple witchy, bitchy, sassy and classy vibe. You know it on this show. This is your sassy agony aunt pouring you a hot cup of tea whilst you sit by a rainy window. This is some home truths that may come with a bit of a spiritual twist, because this is Season of the Witch after all. Should you stay or should you go? Is your boss being an absolute asshole? Are you struggling with self-doubt? I've got your back. I have got your back. So what you need to do if you want to have your message, your note, your problems, your quandaries read out on and discussed on the show, you can send them over to SOTW with Rowan. Really botched that one. SOTW with Rowan over on Instagram, or you can send me an email on seasonofthewitchpodcast@gmail.com. Do make sure to put those letters cock or Cauldron of Candor in the subject line, just so that I can find those over on both Instagram and Gmail. And do bear in mind, I will be reading those out on the show, so you may want to make sure it is anonymous if you do not want to be known within those. So back to our regular programming and our topic of today. I have become particularly interested in this concept of rites of passage and transitions some 10 or so years ago, when I realized I was just in the world, you know, paying rent, working, with no support. I'd just entered this new stage in my life, and there was no cap and gown, no celebration, no initiation. It was silent. It was difficult, yes, but it was mostly silent. Gosh, it must be more than 10 years ago now. No, gosh, much longer. And I'm thinking around after the time my mum passed away, so really going on from last week's episode now, actually. And I was just suddenly thrust into the world. Here you go. Right, off you go. Get on with it. You know, we mark so many things in our lives, from weddings, quinceañeras, graduations, baby showers, but we've lost a sense of what it means to be, for lack of a better word, like grown up, I guess. And I think I've spent so much of my life, and I hope you all do too. I think I still say it now. Like, when I grow up, I want to be. I still find myself doing exactly that. And for a long time, I found myself being really captured by the concept of a vision quest, which is a Western word, but has come from particularly Native American culture. Some West African cultures as well also have things like a vision quest in it that marks this moment of transition from childhood to adulthood, where the quester would seek a vision or a sacred dream. Tersu word, when translated directly, it comes out as something like crying for a dream. It's a ceremony, sometimes referred to as going up to the hill, Now, I can't, what I will say is I can't talk directly or with any authority on any of these concepts as they aren't part of my identity, my culture, my belief system, or faith. So I am drawing on secondary sources for this one. But this would be a time whereby a person would go on a quest to pray, to communicate with spirits, all in the hope of gaining some form of knowledge or understanding. And I should add that, generally speaking, from my research, and again, it's all secondary research that I've conducted using online sources, this is generally a male-dominated ritual, but it doesn't look exclusive to men. It just seems to be more male-dominated. And this has been predominantly reported in Native American-based cultures and may include things like fasting, traveling to a sacred site, and as mentioned before, praying in solitude. And we do see things in Western culture around pilgrimages, the pilgrimage. But this is something that is very specifically a rite of passage and has been something that has been dominated by men within particular tribes or particular communities, whereby, as mentioned, they're going to that sacred site, praying in solitude with an aim to find an answer to help them understand how they can best serve the community. So how that individual will fit within the community, meet the needs of the community. It's an aim to locate their purpose. And it's perhaps an element that I feel is really lost within modern society, modern communities. We are a community of individuals, predominantly. We don't find ourselves to find our place in the community. When we do reflect, generally, its purpose is to return back to ourselves, to see ourselves for the first time. In the West, I feel like we've taken this concept of the vision quest, crying for a dream, and we have commodified it. I'm thinking of the gap year, and it has to be pronounced gap year, because that's it. If anyone's ever been traveling, particularly Southeast Asia, particularly South, I don't know, maybe it's not Southeast Asia as much these days. They are full of the pompous gap years, the people out to find oneself in the culture, and it's always the people that you don't want there. They're on the gap year because it's daddy's money, isn't it? And they're not there to find themselves. They're there to just get drunk and to wear clothes that they shouldn't wear. It just feels like one of those things where they go and they're there to, observe what they would call, and I'm using this word purposefully, like primitive cultures. It's white people going to places like Vietnam, Thailand, and Cambodia. At least it was at the time when I was traveling before going on to work in Taiwan. They treat these cultures as secondary, underdeveloped, third world, lesser than, and all in the name of what as well, traveling there, finding yourself. I don't buy it. I think it's mostly to get drunk. Maybe it's not these days. Maybe it's not. I don't know. We're talking well over 10 years ago that I was traveling. There's clearly an urge to find ourselves, to find our place, to know our part. Just look at the amount of different courses that are available and self-help books that self-help books that are available. As a society, as we've moved away from things like religion towards this individualism, it feels that that need is even stronger, that the need to have a purpose. And speaking on behalf of England here, there has been a very observable collapse, actually, in things like the church in the past 2 decades. I've talked about the church twice on a Spiritual Witchy podcast, but I think growing up in Western society, European society, the church is very prevalent. So it's difficult to avoid. We are seeing churches close all around us, and they are getting turned into housing. So religion isn't serving the individual the way it used to. We are again in a very individualistic society. This is why I believe there has been such a rise in the popularity of things like spirituality, because it is very individualistic. Now, I know, of course, you've got things like covens, but on the whole, predominantly, it is individualistic. Now, I do realize that I might be sounding like this is just communist propaganda, and maybe I am, maybe it is. But I think this shift is an important one to focus on. As a society, we are moving away from religion, but still seeking purpose, something to serve and someone to be. Now, as a millennial, I think I have, for a very long time, tried to find my purpose through my work or even through what I consume. And I'm not talking like what I eat, maybe what I eat, but also objects as well. Even my spirituality, I think, has been something at times that I have consumed. You know, we've talked about the commodification. The commodification of the craft. It's the C words. We've talked about the commodification of the craft in season one, and I think we've even mentioned it in season two. And I think, is it something Kruger? Not Freddy Krueger? Krugler? The artist who kind of takes on that popular phrase, I am... Oh no, I think therefore I am, I shop therefore I am. Correct me on that one. And I think that is really related to what that is here. I think I shop therefore I am, you know, I consume the craft therefore I am spiritual, almost in that way as well. I think there's so much attributed towards the consumption of, and it gets to this point where everything I have and I do, I feel like it needs to have this purpose. It's not just a function, but it's a purpose. You know, even like my desk that I have at work, it's not just a desk, it's also a standing desk. I think I attribute that to health. I attribute that to positivity. Everything has to have a purpose. And I think so much of that gets exploited to us. And I'm going to come back to this one. This sounds really nihilistic. It is really nihilistic. But what if none of it has a purpose? What if it just is? And I do think that's either incredibly releasing or it's absolutely terrifying. You know, when I try and consider the ways that the West have westernized and repurposed crying for a dream, this vision quest. I do think of travel, of course, the gap year. I call it the gap year. But I do also think of things like meditation and mindfulness. Again, things just appropriated from the East. I think of therapy and counseling as well. When I think about finding purpose, gaining some kind of professional guidance, I think of journaling, spiritual retreats. Oh my gosh, no. No. Have I talked about this on the podcast before? Oh my gosh, if I haven't, I'm going to tell you. And if I have, you're going to hear this story twice. So skip over it. So when we were in Taiwan, I'm sure I must have told this story. When we were in Taiwan, we got some free tickets. They were like £50. I don't know what that is in dollars. And I don't know what that was in Taiwanese dollars. £50 each. Expensive. They were expensive, especially expensive at the time, for a silent retreat, this spiritual retreat. And we thought, do you know what? Like, you know, we got given them for free, but someone was, oh, I can't go. We'll take them, of course. You know, why would you ever, ever say no to something like that? I swear I've told this story. So my husband and I, we turn up to this retreat, and we thought, like, you know, maybe like a section of it would be silent. You know, you'd sit there for an hour. It was a whole day thing. Which is fine. I can maybe get my head around it. And it increasingly got weirder and weirder. And I sound incredibly judgmental. This is sassy. It's witchy and it's bitchy. It just wasn't for me. There was like a ritual where we had to do like a mouth wash of like producing an excessive amount of saliva with no water. And then swallowing that and then just doing that for an hour, and it was disgusting. And you know, I can understand what they were saying in terms of like it will, sorry if anyone's eating right now, in terms of like it will improve your digestive system or something along those lines, but it was disgusting. And there was lots of chanting. You know, I could kind of like get my head around that. You know, we weren't allowed to chant Actually, there was lots of chanting at lots of breathing that was nice, lots of laying on the floor, which was cold. But the thing that got me, all of that sounds really nice. It sounds, besides the spit part, it was in a room with no windows. We thought we would be in some gorgeous Zen garden. It was in a room with no windows, right next to a motorway, right next to the freeway. It was really noisy outside and just dark and stuffy and hot. No AC in the middle of Taiwan, subtropical climate. And lunch, we were like, oh wow, there's lunch. The whole time, my husband and I are looking at each other like trying to communicate with our eyes the phrase, what the fuck? And I'm just like, there was lots of like, there was like at one point, I think it's like a genital massage. I'm like, not on each other. It was all just too weird. It was really fucking weird. And they were like looking at each other like, what do we do? What do we do? And we got to lunch, and lunch was a bowl of warm water with like bamboo shoots. It was disgusting. I'm so judgmental. It's not my kind of spiritual journey, and I'm sure it's so many other people's spiritual journey. It was not mine. And we're like signaling, like, to the door, like, we're gonna go. I can't do it because it's a podcast. But it was so emphatic. And we slowly slink on over, put our shoes on, walk to the door, walk outside. And as we're outside, there's someone in the hallway, and they go, "Where are you going?" And like, we just remembered that. I'm like, the oven's on. We left the door open. The cat needs feeding. We didn't have a cat. We just couldn't think of anything. And so we just stared. We're like, we just realized we had to go. Just to go. We need to go. And in normal circumstances, someone goes, "Okay, thank you for coming. I hope to see you again soon." They stand in front of the lift, and the lift's the only way out. There's no stairs. Why are there no stairs? And they say, "You can't go." You can't go. And at this point, we're like, "Oh, no, we have to. We need to. We want to." "We've ordered your dinner for the evening. It'll be wasting food." We're like, okay, that sounds a little less scary. Okay, no, it's fine. You can give it to someone else." "No, the meals are perfectly proportioned to everyone." We said, "Give it away to someone who's homeless. We do have to go." And again, he stands in front of the lift, and I push the lift. I'm like, "I am going." And he's like, "I need to go and get someone to speak to someone." The lift comes. We get in the lift, and we can hear them talking. Where did they go? And then we get on the lift. We fucking run. I swear, what happened to everyone else afterwards? I know I'm being very hyperbolic, but no, I'm not. I'm not. It was creepy. It was just creepy. We escape and we run as fast as we can. We get on the MRT, which is like the underground or the metro system, and we get off and we go to TGI's and we have cocktails and eat fries and swear to never do that again. So spiritual retreats, I've done one, and I was clearly not the best person for it, so sorry about that. What else do I think? That was such a side tangent, and I'm so sorry to anyone who has heard that story before. I'm sure I've told it on the podcast. Other things, we have educational pursuits in terms of trying to find ourselves. We can do things like volunteering, creativity, finding ourselves through our own creativity. Now, earlier I said I've been thinking about this concept for some time now, and I guess we're here talking about personal rituals and performances. This is honestly the first time I've ever really begun to think about my old performance artwork as spiritual ritual. But they were really that. I see now the title of the piece that I completed was very appropriating in nature. I know a lot much more about that. I do hope that it came from a place of respect. I'd been so enamored with the concept of a pilgrimage and got really focused in on that concept of crying for a dream, and even titled the piece that, and which I think is probably quite inappropriate now when I look, it is inappropriate when I look back at it now, actually. And within, I liked the crying for element in this kind of the sense of a desperation of needing, requiring purpose. Let's go past it. We'll atone. I've atoned. Did I take things actually from a Native American spiritual practice? No, just the title, just a translated title for it within this. Look at me trying like backpedal, gonna get cancelled. So within this, I asked my husband to drive me off, and I was blindfolded. And what I had to do, so all I had with me was something to record the performance with, and I had my backpack, something to cook with, but no food, no water, and I had to find my own way home. I must admit, it as difficult as it felt incredibly spiritual. It felt really connected. It was the first time that I felt I had been alone with my own thoughts for such a significant period of time. Walking and walking meditation have always been, they've been a huge part of my practice for what feels like the longest I can remember. Long time listeners of the show know that I am in love with the mountains, and I often refer to them as filling me back up again. And there was a hike, the West Highland Way, I've talked about it on the show before. I completed it again this year as well, but this time with my husband. And I wrote a piece a while back on it, and I thought I'd feature it here. So this was written back in 2021. I wanted to get it published, but I never... Was it 2022? It was 2022. I wanted to get it published, but I never quite found... It never quite found its home. And I think today might be where it gets its place. So we've got a bit of a story that we're going to go in, something that has been written that I'm going to read out for you. And it's about this particular transformational long distance hike. So this isn't the performance piece that I was talking about, but it was just a hike, but one that I'd hope to transform me. I'm going to tell you a bit about the history. Today, I'm still unsure how I found the West Highland Way. It was to be the short hike before a long summer trek, the latter cancelled as we were months away from adopting our son in August 2017. This would be our last holiday together as a two, forever a three, and what a better way to do it than by each other's side walking towards our son. Both our packs were heavy, cumbersome, clunky, and difficult. And in many ways, I wanted it to be that way. I wanted to feel the weight of the decision we were making. I wanted my feet to cry out for it. On day two, it rained. Of course it rained. It was Scotland. Scotland rains. Our shoes were soaked, pack sodden, and spirits thoroughly damp. We camped by the shores of the loch, shared a whiskey, danced around the smoky fire and stared into the waters, hoping it would tell us that it was all going to be okay. We woke the next day to more rain and my husband's swollen hips the size of a grapefruit. The beauty of the heavy weight backpack, carrying it had greater implications than before. His bag strap had snapped and he was carrying all the remaining weight on one shoulder, the rest at his waist. The ensuing journey back home was heavier than the pack, the weight of quitting my spiritual journey playing out over the ferry, two buses, and a train that took over 24 hours. For my husband, it was a mistake that we would never make again, and for me, I was still waiting for an answer from those waters. Was it all going to be okay? Now, I'd hoped for a transformation, the kind I'd read about and watched. I was still grieving the complicated loss of my mother, who we'd carefully described as strong-willed to the adoption team. Strong-willed became a catch-all for those in my life who were both physically and verbally abusive. Both my parents were very strong-willed. I'd read countless times that children of physical abuse are likely to replicate these behaviours as a parent, and I was desperate to cut that cycle off and leave it to the mountains. That same summer, we adopted our son. He was beautiful, bundled smiles that seemed to silence the thought of the failed long-distance hike. The years that passed were harder than the Scottish rains, and at times more painful than the blisters on my feet. Our son, as wonderful and beautiful as he is every bit of challenging I was not ready for. Perhaps this was the endurance sport I hadn't quite prepared for. He has strong outbursts of persistent defiance, symptomatic of his complex neurological conditions. Challenges that make his everyday that little bit harder and sometimes my everyday that little bit heavier. At times, it has felt like slipping back into my past. Me, the child, him, my aggressive parents. In 2020, I made the decision to return to the water, to look into them, and to ask the question again. Will everything be okay? However, this time, I would be alone. The thought of being alone for what was once a transformative activity of our togetherness, it was painful. But the ache to walk outweighed this. The pandemic disrupted the walk 3 times, and each time I was perhaps secretly happy that I didn't need to burden myself with such solitude. In April 2022, there were no hitches or hiccups, and I started the trail again. I'd perhaps slept 2 hours in total on the overnight bus journey from London and needed to walk 21 miles on the section that was notoriously the worst, along Loch Lomond. The day before, I'd bought a new water carrier out of a last-minute panic to feel prepared. It was something I could do to control out of nothing. Perhaps in its attempt to remind me of that rain-soaked pack 5 years earlier, it exploded. 2 litres soaking everything absorbent. It turns out that sweat-wicking socks and ultra-absorbent towels do retain a lot of moisture. And I rang out what I could at Queen Street Station and attached as many things as possible to the outside of my pack, like a walking washing line. Still, I smiled. I was doing it. And this time, I would finish it. On the train out to the trailhead, I pinned the lock that my husband and I had visited all those years ago as a stop for my break. I would stop for an answer. I would ask the waters, they would reply, and it would all be okay. They would tell me that I was going to be okay. I wasn't always this into the outdoors. In fact, I can quite confidently say I was the absolute opposite. The year my husband and I met, in 2010, we spent a summer together traveling Southeast Asia before living together in Taiwan. With no other home to go to, I packed all my worldly possessions into a suitcase, storing it in Bangkok. And we shared a backpack of my carefully curated look, which I'd modelled from Vogue's interpretation of Indiana Jones. In a matter of days, I needed to throw out my now moulding suede boat shoes and skinny chino shorts. Neither were made for jungle tracks. I'd refused to climb up hills because my skinny jeans were too tight and had a meltdown when we couldn't find hairspray in Phnom Penh. It all changed the night we were staying in a Cambodian beach hut. It was a humid night, noisy with the sounds of insects, an engorged moon pushing through our open window. Sounds of the river trickled by the hut and pulled me from my sleep. I felt helpless to the sound. The idea of getting in the water was addictive, perhaps one of the most magnetic feelings I've ever experienced. I dunked my head under, wetting the perfectly styled hair, and laughed. I laughed at how ridiculous I looked. I laughed at being ridiculous. The rest of the trip, I wore a bandana around my head and donned scrappy shorts and the same sweat-stained t-shirt. The change was irreversible. I was reformed. The landscape and waters forever changing me. In 2022, the Scottish Trail seemed uncharacteristically hot, as though it thought to remind me of my Cambodian transformation. My jacket off in minutes, and I was down to shorts and a t-shirt in a dry April sun. I welcomed the heat that baked the washing line on my back, wagging as I walked like the tail of a hungry puppy. At the time, I hadn't quite realized, but I wasn't walking at all. I was near jogging. Either the excitement or the anticipation, I wasn't sure which, but something was fueling me to reach the lock side. The location we made the decision to quit 5 years earlier. Tracing the steps back, I tried to feel the echoes of my previous footsteps, the ones that worried whether I would be a good dad, a good husband, a good person. The me I was walking alongside was very different. At 11:50, I reached the spot exactly as remembered. Eerily as I remembered, as if pebble for pebble. And I took my pack off and felt the whip of air on my sweaty back. Lighter for a moment. I took my shoes off. A gust of wind could have blown me into the mountains. I felt so light. Walking towards the water, I took my clothes off and stepped into its lapping chill. Will I be okay? The waters had 5 years to think about the answer, and so had I. It held me in cold clarity, keeping me for however long I hoped to stay as my toes grew pale and numb. But in all of that, it didn't answer. It didn't speak. It wouldn't tell me if I could get through another day of being verbally or physically abused by my child. It wouldn't tell me if I would reconcile the loss of a mother who'd spent 13 complicated years grieving. And I tried to walk further, the water growing darker, just like the past before me. The scars of the water eroded rocks hidden in the depths, the silence no different to the lack of answers my mum had given in her death. I looked to my backpack, my shoes, the shell of my body sat by the water's edge. Cold waters bit my ankles, an awakening to the stark reality that I was just another idiot stood in the water, looking to be transformed. Watching a paddleboarder in the distance, I churned through the slew of thoughts she was firing at me, and in submission, I retreated to the shores, to the start of the trail, where we last quit. A new beginning. I thought of myself forever at its edge, questioning among the chattering flow. Perhaps I would return once more, in another 5 years, and ask the same question. And again, receive no answer. Arriving to camp that night, I wanted to cry. It felt like a moment that I should cry for, but I didn't. I lit up with excitement, forgetting that the waters never gave me my answer, only remembering one thing. Keep moving forward. Perhaps the transformation was at the finish line. And each day it averaged to around 20 miles or more and became progressively wilder as the mountains stretched up to the skies around me. Find me in the mountains, I thought. It was all I could hear myself saying at times. Find me in the mountains, in roaring winter's winds. I could feel me in every waving bracken, crooked heather, lingering sunset. I could hear her, my mother, my sister, my friend. All those gone, but reclaimed to the wild. Each step was like walking amongst my everything. A delightfully painful endurance. But all was okay. Always moving forward. I'd feared solitude. The thought of aloneness stopping me from stepping foot into the wild for years. Out in the Valley of Giants, I met so much of myself in the constant self-chatter monologue or humming of a song I couldn't find the second verse to. In remoteness, I could give space for the ghosts to speak and to speak for them. I never felt isolation once. I'd imagined myself in the mountains, reformed by their scale and healed of my trauma. In many ways, I felt like they magnified it. Fresh on the tailcoats of losing my mum at 20, I created a video titled The Grief Forger and Its Five Commandments. We talked about that last week. I recorded the voiceover in a sound booth where I first understood the phrase deafening silence. There's no reverberation, just walls that soak your sighs and sniffs. I could hear the pulsing of blood in my left ear, the hissing of nerves across my body in my right. How could the mountains, in their great expanse, feel so similar? Amplifying my trauma. Why wouldn't they take the trauma from me? My eyes began to water at the thought, and I reassured them that it was just the wind. The walk was completed in Fort William, nestled deep at the end of the High Street, an anticlimactic pedestrian location surrounded by coffee shops, pubs, and Highland Tat, the world of the living. I reached around desperately for that feeling of completeness, perhaps reform. I longed desperately to step outside the world of the living, but knew I had to return to it, back to tears, tantrums, and trauma. I closed my eyes, and I pictured myself released to the wild, where I'd always longed to go, gliding through the glens, resolved, reformed, reformed. It helped. A bit. Trailhead transformations seemed so glorified, a fix to all life's trauma. I wrongly thought I would be resetting the button, and instead I was just taking the next step. I soon came to appreciate the power of the next step on the train journey back through the mountains towards Glasgow, each small step accumulating 96 miles of deep, desolate thought along the trail. And despite the many miles I walked, I was still all the things I started as. So what happens when the trail does not transform you? What happens when you come out of it unchanged? For me, I realized the answers never lay at the bottom of the loch or at the top of the mountain. In those 5 years that passed, I was always in the mountains, always moving forward, and sometimes, but not always, I was okay. The challenge was never the hike. It was the everyday, and many miles of mundane living stretched out before me. The mountains offered escape, not transformation. And this is the new trail I need to walk. And I grasped tight to the hope I will one day reframe the difficulties of parenting my challenging neurodivergent son to the ways I cherished the blisters on my feet. But I'm not there yet. That was written 2 years ago now, and things are a little easier. Do I cherish the blisters? Some days I do. I do try and stay a lot more present. I'll give him a cuddle and I will try and think about myself in hopefully 20 years, looking back on that cuddle and thinking how precious that moment is and being really present. I am a little reframed, but not completely. This is all to say that you don't need these huge grand gestures for transformational change in your life. They could probably just come from stepping outside your house and walking down the road. Putting yourself in the way of great mountains are rather great, but I don't think we really need to create a pilgrimage to demarcate ourselves, our purpose, and our lives. I think we really do live in a world of happenstance. We can put ourselves in the way of events, but it's ultimately, it's up to us to choose a path, either that or have it chosen for us. And I think reflecting on this, what has become quite a big episode actually, our purpose might just be that there is no purpose. There is no grand design. And that sounds awfully nihilistic, but I see some positivity in it too. If there is no grand purpose to it all, then we create it. I do think the real trail is the ones that we are walking every day, and I do think they are so much harder, and we do not give ourselves enough bloody credit for those journeys. We give someone a huge round of applause when they complete a 100-mile hike, but not the daily slog. Acknowledge your bloody daily slog. You deserve it. That's a round of applause in case that doesn't read well on a microphone. That's me doing a really limp round of applause. You do really deserve it. It was When 2023, so a year later, I completed that hike with my husband. So what was 5 years going on 6 years, we did actually do it together after what I'd written there. We traveled up, we had babysitting, we traveled up on the night bus and was hiking the next day. It was real hardcore stuff. And we had babysitting. Grandma and granddad were so fortunate. My husband's parents, they looked after our son for a week. Less than a week, about 5 days actually, and we completed the trail in record time for us. We packed a lot less and we stayed in, we didn't camp this time, and we did it together. And it highlighted to me that daily piecing together, that those answers aren't always going to be found in the grand gestures. Give yourself permission to go slowly. And I think going on a hike, you learn the power of pain of each footstep. You acknowledge each footstep that you're making each day. There's no purpose to the day. You haven't got work. You're getting up to walk. But we don't get up in the morning and acknowledge our days in the same way we do at the trailhead. And I want, for me, moving forward, and I hope for all of you, that you can acknowledge that and acknowledge the amazing journeys that you are doing each day. Just because they're back and forth out our house to work, they're all journeys and they're all going in a direction and they're all just as spiritual. That purpose that you're seeking for in life may for some come from a higher being, spoken down to them. I do truly believe, this is my belief, that you are the person making that decision. You can wait and have that decision made for you. You can just bloody go out there, dip your head in a river if you need to. That's what's going to do it. But that day to day, you've got the power. It's absolutely within your control. Of course, I'm speaking from a space of privilege. I'm in a very privileged position from where I am today. And there have been many a time where I've not had the power in my life, where I have been the subject of violence. And I think that's worth highlighting there. This is really getting really serious and deep now. You know, there are people who are in violent situations. But I do think there are times, you know, similar to the Cambodia situation, I think I needed someone, something else, something other than me to change me, to save me. But I think in Scotland, I needed to save myself. I needed to push myself over that next step to say, you are going to be okay. That had to be my voice. I had to be internalizing my own voice, not someone else's, that whole time. And that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining me for another serious deep dive, this time into rites of passage and exploration of trauma, thinking about spiritual journeys, transformation, and also thinking about the power of the self to give purpose to your own life, or even just questioning whether it needs to have purpose in the first place. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to send over your thoughts, quandaries, questions, problems over to Cauldron of Candor, where I will be reading some of those out and hoping to help ponder those problems with a bit of a spiritual witchy twist. You've been listening to Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken, and as always, don't forget to stay witchy, bitchy, sassy and classy. It wouldn't be the podcast without it. Ta-ra now.